Hi, I'm Dr. Ann Simon, science advisor to the X-Files, and you are listening to the X-Cast.
Welcome to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and I'd like to welcome the writer of season 11's penultimate episode, Nothing Lasts Forever, Karen Nielsen. Karen, how are you today?
Hi, thank you. Really good. I'm excited.
Good. I can't wait to talk to you about this episode. There's just so much I can't wait to discuss with you about.
Uh-oh.
First of all, it was an awesome episode. I loved it so much.
Thank you.
And I've heard nothing but great things about it. So, if you don't mind, we can start off. We've got a few of our Facebook fans who asked some questions on our Facebook group. So I'm going to try to, like, as they come up and work those in. But we have a really good one to start off with. Marlene wanted to know, what was the experience like for you moving from being a writer's assistant to fully writing an episode? And also how you got started in screenwriting, and have you always wanted to write?
It's a big one.
I know. There's a lot to unpack there. So you want to just start?
I'll unpack it backward.
Yes.
I haven't always wanted to write. I don't think I had the confidence. I always wanted to make movies. And then I went to film school, then just started working and thought, I like bossing people around, so I want to be a director. And so I made lots of short films, and I did write them. I just never considered myself a writer. It was just a means to make movies. And then the more I worked in this industry, the more I had to say, and the more I realized that writing was the place to do that for me. And I think I just built my confidence more and more with writing. And then when I was started off as a producer's assistant, I would always connect with the writers.
Yeah.
And I would always start to become friends with them and assist them and lean on them a bit more. And that's how I actually met Glenn Morgan. I was a producer's assistant on Tower Prep, but I just kept going to Glenn and helping him out, and then working with the writer's room in LA a lot. And I just kind of overtook the script coordinating because I was like, I want to do this. And I think that was my big transition into starting to own being a writer and going, you know, I'm actually good at this. And Glenn was a lot in helping me with that confidence. And then I kept working with him. We did Intruders together, and I was producers assisting and then writers assisting and directors assisting. And I just kept, and I was making short film projects through all this time and getting more and more confidence. And then I was script coordinating full time on different shows. And that's when I'd worked with Glenn, I guess last time I was on Intruders, and I found out X-Files was coming here. And I was just like, I called Glenn and I'm like, is X-Files really coming here? Do you need me? And he's like, nice. Yeah, let me call Chris Carter and we'll get you guys a meeting.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, so I met with Chris and he's just so chill, Chris Carter, that I kind of led the interview. But we both love dogs so much, so that we kind of bonded over that. And then, that was awesome. And we just got on so well, and then started script coordinating with them on X-Files, and I was just so overwhelmed with how inclusive they were. And I would say that first season of X-Files really helped my transition into knowing I could be a writer, because then I wrote a pilot script I was really proud of, and it helped me get into this writing program in Canada that they take 6 writers every year.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that for sure. So I'm definitely going to ask you about that next. So when you got in touch with Glenn Morgan, or he got in touch with you about coordinating for the writers, was that season 10? What was the timeline like for that?
It was right when, because word was going around Vancouver that X-Files for season 10 was coming up.
Okay.
And I was on another show, and I was just like, oh no, what do I do? And I called Glenn. I definitely learned in this industry that you can't sit around waiting for people to call you.
Absolutely. Exactly.
You have to make things happen. And that's definitely been my career. I don't sit and wait for people. I make things happen.
That's awesome.
So I called him and he's like, oh yeah. He's like, oh yeah. Okay.
Let me remind you that I exist.
Yeah. Exactly. Being up in Canada too, they know you and they appreciate you, but you're in Canada. Like
yeah,
you're not
yeah.
in the forefront of everyone's mind. And that's hard to keep being on the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did you watch the show originally? Were you a fan to start off with? Or
it was the very first film set I ever saw.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's so coincidental.
Do you remember which episode, by any chance?
Or I know the scene. I should ask my friend Julie, who does behind the scenes on X-Files, is obsessed. And I should describe the scene to her so she can tell me what episode it is.
I wonder if I could guess. Do you think? I could guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I was walking in White Rock with some friends, and we saw that there was a film crew, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. And I was probably 13 or something. And all I remember seeing is Gillian Anderson, and they were in front of a hotel, like a motel kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were running in the parking lot, running from the car into the motel.
Ooh. Hmm.
It's what I remember, towards a motel. They were in a parking lot.
Ooh, I wonder if it was Detour, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It would be on the shot.
Listeners, yeah, if you have any guesses, let us know on Twitter or Facebook.
Hotel parking lot, go!
Do you remember what season it was?
It must have been the earlier seasons, because I can't remember exactly how old I was, but X-Files must have been new in Vancouver.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing Gillian Anderson. I know it was around White Rock, and that was pretty exciting. So I was like, that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So I always go with that. And yeah, we watched it in and out for a while. I was younger, so I wasn't always allowed to watch it.
Right, yeah. Same here.
But yeah, because again, you didn't see many characters like Scully back then either.
Exactly.
So I was drawn always a lot to, like, Facts of Life was one of my favorite shows because it was all girls when I was a kid. And Buffy the Vampire is one of my favorite shows.
Yes.
So it's like those female-led ones. So I know I watched it in and out, but I guess I see these fans that watched it dedicatedly. I'm like, wow, you guys are amazing.
I think I started really seriously watching about like season 2-ish. Yeah, so that we were about the same age, like when it started. I think I was 10 when it started, so I was like 12, 13 when I started really getting into it.
Your parents let you?
Well, when I was like 12, 13, so like season 3-ish, I think, is when I really started watching it. Then I went back and saw like the first seasons when it started coming out on video and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it first started, the first 2 seasons I missed, but I think the first one I saw was Kalasari, and it scared the pants off of me, so I never watched it again for a while.
It was good. Yeah.
So watching the show, you said you had it influenced you a little bit with those characters. Did it make you want to – is that what made you want to get into filmmaking, or was it something that you wanted to do anyway, or
– I grew up in a time where we all didn't have such access to video.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never like so common of a thing of going, yeah, I want to be a filmmaker, and having that be a real option. So it took me a little while. I went to university and I was like, I hate this. And then I was just always obsessed with film and TV and connecting with that's the main way that I connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a cool way, because no matter where you are, like when you look at X-Files fans, like they're everywhere, all over the world. And that is so amazing to me that these characters can reach all these people from different cultures and different languages and walks of life. And we all connect to it. And that's why I want to be a filmmaker, because I think that's amazing to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that excites me.
Yeah. And seeing like all the fandoms come together and everybody meeting each other, and you just have like this instant friendship. That's one of the things I've loved about being able to have this opportunity to be on the X-Cast, because I get to talk to people from all over the whole world about my favorite show, and it's their favorite show, and it's so exciting. And, I totally understand that. It's a really cool fandom to be part of, for sure.
Yeah, and anytime that's created, I think that's just the way connecting people. I love it.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure. So I want to hear about, is it the Bell Media Primetime TV Writing Program? Is that, did I get that right? And you're one of only six people. That's amazing. What a huge honor.
It was. It was kind of very surreal.
Yeah, that's so cool. So tell us a little bit about the program and what that involved and how it helped you get to where you needed to be to write for the X-Files.
Yeah. So the school's called the Canadian Film Center. And they're really, it's cool. It's really great. So I wrote a pilot during the last, we were shooting the finale of X-Files, and I just got inspiration and confidence, I think, to just go ahead and write this pilot. And that's what got me into this program. So they create a mock writer's room. So you get an executive producer that brings their own show to the program, and you develop it with them.
Oh, wow.
So you're basically creating a real room. So we got Karen Walton, who she wrote Ginger Snaps and wrote on Orphan Black. We developed a show with her, and that was like 3 months, and we all wrote a script for it. So that was really, because, you know, X-Files doesn't have a writer's room. I was a script coordinator, but I was always in the production office and working one-on-one with the writers, which I actually love, because you really connect with them and get to know them all individually. And they all need you in different ways, which I love. So, yeah, so that's great. But this was a different experience of actually working in a writer's room and collaborating and stuff. So that was cool. And then you go on to write your own pilot, original series, and you get a mentor to do that. So I worked with Sean Raycraft. He's Canadian but works in Los Angeles and writes for, like, so many different shows. And he mentored me in writing my TV series Parker's Fall. And it was awesome because my show is a little weird, and as you guys can tell, I'm a little weird.
Hey, we like weird. We're X-Files fans. It works for
us. He was the first one that kind of got me and embraced the weird and embraced the weird. So I love that. And he helped me really get confidence in my voice and going, it's original, it's interesting, like, just lean into that. And I did. And then ABC Signature Studios also sponsored the program. Uh-huh. And they loved my show and have optioned it. And so I'm developing it with them right now. And that was pretty cool. I mean, that's
awesome.
That was a huge, huge confidence boost. And, and embracing your voice and going, you know what, I leaned into my voice. And it's not for everyone, but for me, I love it. And I'm saying all the things I want to say. It's inclusive. It's diverse. It's got women. It's got men. It's got everybody, you know. It's like,
yeah, that's so cool. And as a writer myself, like, that was one of the things that I had a really hard time with in the beginning was, like, they say, find your voice. And it's like, what even is my voice? I don't know. And then I like to say, I just wrote the book I wanted to read. So
yeah. Well, they did an exercise with us at the Canadian Film Center to, try and help us find the voice. So it's like 20 questions, and they're kind of the same questions over and over. So you think this is stupid, but it's like, no, it's like, what do you want to say? Like, what's important to you?
Yeah.
And that was really helping me go, this is what I want to say. And it kind of surprised me. And I was like, okay, but it matches all my writing. So why does this surprise me? And I love that. And that really helped me own it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a good feeling, and especially, like, having the validation of getting to write for your TV show that you grew up loving, and that kind of thing. That's really cool.
Big shocker of a call, because I knew I was going to be a script coordinator again, and I email a lot with Gabe Broder and Chris, and, you know, keeping them up to date with what I was doing, and I would send Darren Morgan my scripts, and he'd always give me feedback, which was always amazing.
Right.
Yeah, he was a great mentor. And so I was just like, guys, I'm amazing. Don't forget I'm amazing. but having the writer's room in LA and me being in Canada, you know, I was just like, pushing for it to happen. So it was a really amazing phone call to get saying, do you want a script?
That's so cool.
It was very surreal, but yeah. It was great. And to know that these guys were supporting me and stuff. So, and I just, it was a good timing because I was just finally got the confidence in myself as a writer going, I can do this.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing how it all works out the way it's supposed to?
That's cool.
So since the X-Files doesn't have a traditional sense of a writer's room, and I mean, I guess the writer's room, you would think comedy shows kind of had that, but now pretty much all shows have them, right?
Yeah.
That's something that's sort of evolved as far as drama goes over the time that The X-Files has been on air, so, or off air.
Yeah.
But what was your job as a script coordinator like? What was the pre-production process like for this season and last, like season 10 and season 11 have a much different feel to me? Like season 11 feels a lot more cohesive. Was the process different between the two seasons, or what were your duties and how did that kind of evolve?
Well, season 10, I think it's like everyone came with their own idea of what they were going to write. I think it was just more singular, mm-hmm. of like, this is the episode I wish I could have written and now I can. Mm-hmm. You know, so everyone got that opportunity and it was really cool. And everyone went off and wrote their scripts and then would bring them to me. And then I just work with everybody with formatting, tracking, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then when they're, it was fun because everyone's directing their own episodes. So to be able to be with them during pre-production and support them in casting and rewrites and all that kind of stuff was really fun, and research whatever they needed research on. Basically whatever they needed, I was there for.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then the next season, I feel like it was more of, okay, what are we going to do this season instead of just thinking about the episode? It was more like, yeah, I think more of the season was thought of instead of just, this is the episode I always wanted to write kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So,
yeah.
And I'm guessing like either you as a coordinator or, you know, the writers, did they all get together and sort of toss out their ideas and what they wanted to do as a whole, or?
Yeah. And since that happened in LA, I wasn't a part of it, but I did hear about it, that they would get together, chat about what they wanted to do. Chris would talk about what he was doing mythology wise. And then everyone would pitch their concept for what they wanted to do, and everyone would give feedback and stuff.
Yeah.
And then everyone would go off separately, from what I understand, and do their outlines and then bring them back to different writers to get feedback kind of thing.
That's cool. That's cool.
So me being in LA, I just had a very condensed, I had a very condensed version of that with not everybody, which was a little disappointing, but it's still, when you got James Wong and Glenn Morgan as your go-tos, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess you definitely weren't sorry to have them, you know, directing.
No, I mean, James Wong's an awesome director.
Right. Yeah, I definitely can't wait to hear a little bit more about what it was like working with him on this episode.
Yeah.
I did notice, I know you had a short film on the season 10 DVD. Mm-hmm. That was featured on there. How did that happen? How did you manage to, like, how did all that happen for you? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I was, so I did like an Indiegogo campaign to make it happen, and I'd sent the short script to Glenn for feedback, and he contributed to my Indiegogo campaign. So he's very supportive of my process of making that film. So he was aware of it the whole time, sent him the final cut and stuff. And then when we started on X-Files, I had just finished it, and it was starting to get into a few festivals. And I was nervous to show it to people. You know, it's like, these are important people.
Yeah.
I don't want them to think I'm awful. I was sharing offices with our visual effects guy, Bill, and our editor, Rob, for the first episode of that season was up with Ben, who wrote an episode this season. And so I showed it to them because I felt a little safe, and they all loved it. The next day, they're like, oh my God, this is amazing, Karen. Like, really good. And I'm like, really? Oh, thank you. And I thought that was going to be the end of it. But then they started telling everyone on the crew how great it was. Some people would be coming in going, I hear you made a short film. I'm like, yeah. And then Chris Carter walks in my office, and he's like, Karen, I hear you made this really awesome short film. And I'm like, what?
Did you fall out on the floor?
Yeah.
I think I would have curled up right then and there and been like, this is it, I'm done.
Yeah, I was like, this is really cool. So cool. And then I was saying, like, making X-Files is like making a feature film every week while you're prepping another feature film. So it's always crazy. So it was so nice to get those accolades, and I'm like, okay, great. And then I know it was a crazy, something was going on. It was nuts, and Glenn was just leaving to go do something, and he was because I sit in front of his office, and then he's just like, Karen, we got to make sure we get your short film on the DVD. And then he left. And I'm like, what? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, he's just teasing, right? It's not real.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I'm like, that's not leaving my brain. So I let things go for a bit, and then when it's getting to the end of the season, I'm like, so, you said this. He's like, yeah, talk to Chris about that. Let's get that going. And I'm like, okay. And talk to Chris, and he's like, of course, yes, we're definitely doing that. And that's done. So cool. It
there
happened.
You go. That's how it happens. That's
yeah,
so
just
cool.
So they're just so supportive and kind.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's like, it's, I mean, it really seems like a family for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I did notice a familiar looking location in your film from the episode Ghoulie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that a, I'm guessing that wasn't a coincidence or?
No, total coincidence. I was like,
really?
He saw my short film and maybe subconsciously he remembered it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, Jim, that's where my short film was done. He's like, oh, really? And I'm like, yes. Did you not know? He's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. But I think subconsciously.
Yeah.
He remembered.
Is that a popular location in Vancouver? I've never had the opportunity to go to Vancouver. It's definitely on my list because I'm such a fan, but
yeah.
I'm on the East Coast. Is that a place a lot of people know of in Vancouver? Is it?
No.
No?
It's because it's about an hour outside of Vancouver.
Okay.
It's in Mission.
Okay.
And it's just this really weird, interesting, crazy guy who bought one of our ferries and parked it on his land. And sold it for parts and just keeps it there. So it was actually condemned for a little while, too. So there was no filming allowed.
Wow.
And then I filmed there during when he was trying to start to get it up to par again so people could film on there. And then, I guess they did some more improvements. And then they're allowing filming again.
Yeah.
But it's a cool spot. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. For listeners, I'm sorry. I totally forgot to mention. We're talking about the ship that was in Ghoulie. Is it the Queen Sydney? Is that the name of it?
You know, I can't remember. But, it's a ferry. It's an old ferry.
That's cool. It's got such personality, and it's so distinctive. It's really cool that you got to use that.
Oh, it's so great. Those guys let us shoot there for free.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was like, dang, thank you so much. We fed them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yes, it was a very cool piece of land. It was great. And there was cows there. So when Finn, because Finn is in the short film too, my dog.
Yeah.
The cows were driving him crazy.
Aww. But it was... That's awesome. So I'm not going to lie. I kind of looked up some of your director's reel on Vimeo and saw a certain other well-known X-Files actor.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like getting a chance to direct William B. Davis?
I know. So that was crazy. And that was before my X-Files. I think I didn't. It was definitely before X-Files. And because I didn't use Glenn to get to him. I had a friend that he's an actor, Daniel, who stars in Grace.
Okay.
The guy, he knew William, and I was like, you know, could you connect us? And I just sent an email to Bill being like, hey, I got this short film, you know, I'd love for you to read this. And he responded so quick, like within hours.
Oh,
so
wow. Quick,
and said, of course. And I was like, what? This fast? You don't even know me.
Wow, that's awesome.
It was so kind, because he's really involved in the independent film community here, and he does his own directing as well. And another reason I was so shocked he said yes is because he was prepping for his own short film, and he was shooting it not in Vancouver. He had to fly to shoot it, because our last day of filming A Pickle, we only had him for a couple hours, because he was getting on a plane to go shoot his short film. And I'm like, you said yes to this while you're prepping your own? Thank you! But he loves baseball, so he wanted to do it.
That's amazing.
I'm not going to lie, super intimidated.
What was it like seeing him in person for the first time? You're like, cigarette smoking man.
I know, but he's actually a sweetheart. So
yeah.
I saw him as my character. I didn't really see him as CSM at first. I saw an actor with a lot of experience, and that's kind of what intimidated me.
Right.
But, like, big hug right away. He was so great with the child actors.
Yeah.
Really helped instill confidence in them. He's like, man, to the lead kid in that, he's like, if I had met you before, you'd be the kid in my short film right now. You're amazing.
He seems such a generous person.
Completely. Yeah. And it was a indie little film. I remember walking onto set, and I didn't really have a green room for actors, and there's Bill on a stool reading the script. I'm like, oh man, I'm so sorry, where can I put you? But yeah, so giving, so kind, so patient. Yeah, I'll always be grateful for him for that.
That's so awesome. I'm glad you had the opportunity. Let's see, I've got another another listener question. Ryan wants to know, what was it like knowing that you were writing perhaps the last standalone non-mythology episode of The X-Files ever, and did that influence your writing and story?
So here's the thing. X-Files is a lot of pressure, and it really gets to you. And I'm not going to lie, it got to me. When I was first brainstorming ideas, the pressure, because not only was the more pressure for me, because I didn't know I was going to be that last episode before the finale at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the season 10, they were all shot in different order than they aired. So I didn't know what order we were going to get. I knew what order we were shooting. So that never really occurred to me that I'd be the last standalone episode aired.
So it was probably good that it turned out that way, huh?
Totally good, because then that's way too much pressure. And I was already feeling so much pressure. It's my first hour of network television, and it's on one of the biggest shows in the world.
In history.
And after all the stuff, and I'm one of a few female writers, so you're just like, oh my god, that was so much pressure. And it did really get to me, and Glenn and Jim both, and Darren, they all had great conversations with me to help me try to get me out of my head and not give in to the pressure. And I remember when I went up to Chris and said, thanked him for giving me this opportunity. He's like, yeah, it's a lot of pressure, huh? thanks for reminding me how much pressure this is.
Yeah, seriously. Well, you did a marvelous job, so.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the episode itself. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like, all my favorite episodes of The X-Files, I find myself saying, what in the world is happening right now? What am I watching?
Awesome.
And I said that a lot during your episode.
Good.
So I had a feeling that you would understand that as the compliment that it is.
Yes, that's exactly the reaction I want.
Yes. So definitely a lot of that going on. So another question comes from Clara. Let's just get right down to it. What did the actors eat on set to make it look like they were consuming organs and blood? Because it was very realistic looking. I bet craft services had a fun time with that.
Yeah, props had such a good time making the smoothies. I posted a picture on Twitter of the layout they gave us while we were trying to decide what shade of red that these smoothies should be and what should be going in them. But yeah, it's just, in the actual smoothie, it's just a concoction of different fruits and stuff to give it that texture.
Yeah. Did you taste it yourself?
Like, it tasted like berries when they were drinking it. Yeah. So much fun with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I made a berry smoothie for my daughter and turned them into icicle pops, you know? And it was like all blackberries. And she came up to me and she's like, Mommy, look. It looked like she was a little tiny vampire in my house. So. Blackberries and raspberries definitely work well. And I love to drink beet juice. So I was thinking a lot about my beet juice, and I might take a break from that for a while after this episode.
A little while.
Yeah, so.
It can make you look young, so maybe not.
This is true. All those antioxidants have to be good for something. So when you were writing the script for this, did you ever gross yourself out? Like, I can't believe I'm writing this. Is this going to be too much? You know, that kind of, were you self-aware while you were writing that? Or did you just try to go all out and get it done?
Collaborating with Glenn and Jim, it's never too much. Because it's Glenn and Jim.
Yeah.
So they like to push the envelope, yeah. And I kind of love that about them. And was like, Glenn's like, he should lick the pancreas, and I'm like, oh. And Jim's like, yes. And I'm like, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think when you're collaborating with two people like that, you're not really aware of what the standard is. Mm-hmm. I know I watched this episode with my family. And how quickly they got grossed out. I was like, really?
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious.
My bar was at Glenn and Jim level. So
yeah.
I don't think I understood how gross it really was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, the singing and the cutting scene, it makes me laugh. Like, I looked at the humor.
I laugh too.
Well, yeah. it's gross, and I get that, but... It's more funny to me than anything.
Yeah, I think we have similar personalities because I was cracking up during that. Like, yeah. The part where she, how much of that was ad-libbed? Because the way she, I think what really makes it was that she was singing and then she just stopped, took a long sip, mm-hmm. and then just went back to it. And then in the background, yeah. You've got all the screaming.
I'm pretty sure that was scripted, but I know that Jim played around with Fiona a lot to really make that a fun scene.
That was just comedy brilliant. In that.
Yeah.
Fiona Vroom was amazing in this episode. She was just absolutely fantastic.
You know why we had to just, even though she already appeared in the season, we're like, mm-hmm. No, we have to.
Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah. She was just brilliant. What were some of your conversations with standards and practices like? Was that a lot of fun, or were you mostly just nervous about trying to get stuff in? Or
because I already had a relationship with them from everyone else's episodes, it was good. I got a few calls for this episode, especially when they were seeing the dailies. I will give it to Fox. They are great. Like, I talked and I explained, and they're like, oh, okay. Well, just make sure you shoot a lot of alternatives.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So they weren't like, now listen here, little lady. We've got to cut back on this.
No, you know, I was really surprised. That's they were pretty supportive. I mean, the lick at the beginning was we talked a lot about.
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to make sure there was enough coverage. And in the script, it reads pretty bloody and gory. So, they had some concerns.
Yeah.
And then I think you mix in American Horror Story director with that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
And so I just get on the phone after that with Jim and just give him a heads up that they want enough coverage. And he's like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know. Just do what you're going to do and we'll figure it out.
Right.
He was pretty smart because he wanted to obviously not get caught in the editing room by being pressured to cut something that wasn't going to work because of S&P. He's a really good director because he shot it. So my theory is people can't handle it when it's just gratuitous.
Right.
It's when it's not character driven or story driven, it's just there for shock value.
Mm-hmm.
Then people are like, it doesn't work. Or like S&P, I could see pulling it a lot easier. But when it's organic and it works for the thing and it's in the flow of the story and it's not gratuitous, I think they accepted it a lot more.
Yeah. I feel like, I remember I had that problem with Bad Blood. I felt like a lot of the gore was just, because I loved the books, but that was one of the reasons that I kind of like shied away from Bad Blood was because it was just so gratuitous, and that there wasn't really anything that added to the character. So I think you totally nailed it with that.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Like, Walking Dead is one of my favorite shows.
Right.
And because it's never gratuitous. And it's some gory stuff in there, too.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, it's story-driven all the time.
Yeah,
story
exactly. Driven. Yeah, I think that you totally nailed it. So, especially...
Give Fox and S&P some props.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were not as hard to deal with as you would expect.
Yeah, that's good. Well, what was? Yeah. Do you remember what the strangest ask you had from them was? Do you recall just like being like, I can't believe I'm going to ask you this, but
I don't know if they had a strangest because it's always just because I think they know what they're getting into when you're doing X-Files, like. There's a gift. I wish I remembered something. Because I do remember calling Jim and going, I'm sorry, I just feel responsible to tell you this. but don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with S&P.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't remember what it was. In general, they were pretty supportive, and it was always just shoot enough coverage right. so that we can cut around it.
Yeah, and but, I mean, licking a pancreas is pretty
yeah,
up
I was,
there.
Yeah, it was, and they really let us show it. After my talk with S&P, I'm like, oh, I don't think they're going to let us show it. We're going to have to do it in the shadows or something. And then I was like, they approved the cut. And you're like, yes, we can show it.
So is there going to be like a director's cut or an unrated yeah. cut on the DVD?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I think he pretty much got what he wanted out
yeah.
there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So when you were doing the script, so when Fiona Vroom starts singing, mm-hmm. there's got to be more. That song is going to be in my head forever, and I'm never going to listen good. To it the same. Was that yeah. the song that you chose to go in it, or did you go through several choices, or how did that go through?
Again, because this is definitely a thing of Glenn and Jim. Glenn yeah. brought that song to the table because they're so iconic, and I told them that's one of the things I loved about their episodes is how they use songs to juxtapose what's happening on screen, and I love that about their writing. And so, yeah, that song came from Glenn, and I was just like, yeah, I think that was the first and only choice.
I mean, it's perfect.
It
yeah.
So. Yeah.
And the way she delivered it was just, I mean.
Yeah, because you could have done that so many different ways. Could have been over the top. It could have. Uh-huh. But they they yeah. did it so well. I remember when those dailies came out, everyone in the art department had them up on their computer, and we were all gathered around watching.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just so awesome. And the set for that was, yeah, it was all, it was so good.
Yeah, brilliant. So did you get to be on the set a lot, or were you mostly staying in the production office?
I was sadly in the production office yeah. a lot. I was welcome on set. It was just, we were shooting, we were prepping Ben's, as well as the finale, as well as doing reshoots for other, not reshoots, but additional stuff for other episodes. So it was just so busy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, and they never shot on stage. So I was like, guys, the one episode we never shoot on stage, so I can't even quickly come out.
Oh, yeah.
We're at Riverview a lot. Uh-huh. And what's super weird is, again, when I was watching it with my family, the church scenes, my brother-in-law is like, where's that church? And I was like, oh, it's a New Westminster. He's like, Karen, we were married in that church. I'm like, what?
That's fantastic.
So my sister and brother were married in Scully's church.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought that was so cool. I was like, that was meant to be.
Oh, that's so fantastic. How yeah. sweet. So we have another question from one of our listeners, and it is, she wanted to know about Barbara Beaumont's name. This is Isabel asking, is the name Barbara Beaumont for your character connected with anything specific? I'm thinking of Charles Beaumont in particular from The Twilight Zone, a writer from The Twilight Zone.
Oh, so. Man, I wish I was that. I should have some really cool answer for you. There was a lot more into that, but my mother's first name is Barbara.
You gotta work mom in there. You have
yeah,
to.
So
yeah,
so mom's name is in there. And then I can't remember what the first, we had Barbara as something else, but it didn't clear.
Yeah.
So then I just had to go search. I knew I wanted BB. Uh-huh. So then I just searched for all these names. Barbara Beaumont had such a good flow to it.
It does. It was just, it really does.
Yeah. I wish I could say this was somebody's name and that's why I chose it.
Well, you know, we won't tell anybody about that. You can just pretend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so, sounded cool.
Yeah. another of the actors that I really enjoyed was Jer Burns. How was it getting him cast for your Dr. Luvina's character?
Yeah, everyone was really stoked because it's an intense role, and yeah. it's like, it's weird. It's all weird. So to get an actor of his caliber to go, yeah, embrace the weird and come on in, it was like, thank you for embracing yeah. the weird and the kooky, not being scared off. Yeah, I thought that was awesome of him.
Absolutely.
And he did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, did he, especially with the medical jargon, that really stood out to me. Did you research that a lot, or did Anne Simon help, or how did you look up all those fancy words? I'm not even going to try to pronounce them.
A lot of Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned that you're a big fan of Buffy. I noticed a lot of Carlina Bridges' character from Juliet reminded me a lot of Buffy. Was that okay in your mind when you were writing her?
I think I was just, when you're just writing like female characters that kick ass, it's just, we don't have that many to reference. So.
Exactly.
I think certain shows will always influence me subconsciously. Yeah. I didn't do it. It wasn't like, oh, she's like Buffy. Like, I wasn't thinking that, right. But because it's a show that means a lot to me, it will always influence my work, I think. But yeah, it wasn't obvious that I was doing it when I was doing it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's such an iconic character. Like you said, we don't have a lot of those types of characters to pull from. So it's kind of, you know, her and Scully, and you got to write Scully. So so how was that getting to write words for those characters? I mean, that's pretty intense.
Again, leaning on Jim and Glenn, right?
Yeah.
You have the guidance of these two people who have been there since day one, and their support and collaboration was integral. You know, they know them better than anyone. So
seriously. And I mean, I know David Duchovny likes to improv a lot and come up with a few of his own things to say. So we're a lot, like, especially with the glasses, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And the gout.
Yeah, that was fun. That was them. Hilarious. That was not scripted.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved that moment. So, yeah. Especially, I know we have to talk about the shipper stuff. So, I feel like in this season alone, it seems like there's been more shipper moments than all the previous seasons combined, just about.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, it's kind of just a natural progression, isn't it? I mean, these two characters, they've known each other for 25 years now, and something's got to give. So was all the shipper stuff and all the Mulder and Scully romance and all that, was that kind of something that you all talked about at the beginning of the season? Or did everybody just sort of include it on their own and it just sort of rose organically, and how did you guys work that out?
I just know from my episode, since I wasn't with everybody, I'm not sure what they discussed and if it was intentional. I just know, like, when I started brainstorming ideas, there was a lot of conversations about what I wanted to do with the episode, and to me it was super important to just have character driven moments. From day one I was just like, I really want to make sure I have these moments with them, whether it was shipper or not. I just wanted character.
Yeah.
That end with the X-File. I was like, I want a character-driven X-File. I don't want it to just be super plot-driven, because character just interests me more. And the guys were super supportive of that. So I think out of that organically came to where they were emotionally at the season at this point, because they're going through so much. And I was like, well, I personally can't ignore the fact that they thought they lost their child, and now that they're, and everything that they've been through, and everything that they're coming together and trying to figure stuff out. Like, it's just, it was time for just that relationship to move forward organically and to talk about it. And I think I like to be honest in what I do, and I was very clear about wanting to do that, and I was supported in that.
Yeah. I mean, it couldn't have come at a, I mean, it just felt so perfect. I mean, the scene, like, every time I've watched it, I've cried. The scene in the church, and even, you know, the moment that comes earlier in the episode when they're in the church again, and Scully's talking about the puppy and all that, I felt like that was just a really sweet moment to add to her character, and just, it was all so real, and you don't really get that kind of insight. Yeah.
When something means something to you, it's like, it's just organic, and it is real, and it feels honest, and you feel like you're actually getting to know these characters, and that's what interests me.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for writing that, because I know, like, there is a collective shipper squee all heard around the world for those scenes.
But I love it.
It was just really nice and touching to see them be able to get to that point and to even just that it was allowed to happen or not allowed, but you know what I mean? Like,
I think people just want to see people they care about connect.
Exactly.
It's like they're doing their cases together and that's fun and everybody loves watching them solve a case together. And shipper or not, you just like to see two people that you really care about having a connection and understanding why there's a connection.
Yeah.
So I think when you're true to that, then it just organically comes to what we saw.
Right, yeah. And it was just brilliant. And one of my favorite scenes that has influenced me over time happened actually in Ocean's 12 of all movies. But when, I don't know if you've seen that movie.
But I have, not recently, but not, yeah.
Yeah, like that scene where they've got Matsui in the interrogation room. And these guys come out and they're just like sweating and they're tired and like, he just won't break. And then Catherine Zeta-Jones, her character, walks in and you don't see any, like all you see is her walk in, lean over and tell him something, but you don't hear what it is. Mm-hmm. And he just like crumbles.
Yeah.
And that was such a pivotal scene for me as a writer because it's like, sometimes you just don't need to know. Like, sometimes you need to just see the effect that it has on a character. And what they actually say is not important, but the reaction is what's important. And I love that you included that moment in this episode because, or not that, you know, it's a similar moment because what's important is what the look on David Duchovny's face, like after Scully leans in and whispers something to him, and like we don't have to know what she said to see that it affected him in a particular way, and that's like that's what the part that always gets me. I'm like, oh, that's when the tears come. So
yeah, cause having this private moment, I've been really surprised with how outraged people are not knowing what she said. I was like, holy crap. I said, I didn't really truly understand the X-Files fandom till that. So it really surprised me, but I was just like, it just felt honest to the situation and the characters. I mean, we're in a Catholic church, for goodness sakes. Like, they're not going to start making out on the benches there. Like, they're having a moment, and for Scully, that's a very respectful place. Like, there's a reason she looked around to see if they were alone.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to have a private moment and say something. And I thought that was really cool.
I mean, it was more intimate than if they had just like laid down on the floor and started going at it. Like,
I always think the most tension comes from what people are about to do, not what, when you see, all the tension's gone when you see someone make out or go with a sex scene or like, it's just gone.
Yeah.
What you want is like the in between. And that's just like, there's so much there.
Yeah.
And it's just more interesting to me.
Especially with their chemistry and everything. It's just it's amazing. Yeah.
Because I think fans think that we're screwing with them, and I'm like, I honestly wasn't. Like, things back, I wasn't going like, oh yeah, I'm going to really piss everybody off. It's, that never entered anyone's mind.
No.
It was being honest to the moment, and it just felt honest. And for them, kissing in a Catholic church would not have been honest.
Right.
That would have been, my very Catholic sister would have been fine. So,
yeah, that makes sense. And honestly, I think it's been a lot of fun getting to see. I know I've seen on my Twitter feed a lot of people with, you know, the picture of Mulder and Scully and then what they think she's saying.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you saw Gillian Anderson, but she said something about the blobfish. I'm impregnated by the blobfish.
Yeah, that was just super funny.
And one of my favorite, I'm a huge Skinner fan, so I know one of our fans, Kurt, was like, I'm still in love with assistant director Skinner. That was one of my favorite
ones. Awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, my favorite one someone tweeted to me was, I think we should get a puppy. And I'm like, yes, that's what she said.
So it's definitely fun to see, you know, what people have come up with, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the fun of it, is I always like when we engage audiences, like I want you guys to think, I want to get you guys excited about things. And so that helps to get you guys interacting with it and getting involved and really caring.
Yeah. Because even the people who were outraged, they had a reaction. I mean, that's something.
They're so, into it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're invested enough to have that kind of reaction. That's got to feel good in its own kind of way, I suppose. So, yeah.
It does.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool. Thank you for giving us that moment and this whole episode. I mean, it's been, like, really fantastic getting all of these insights into it and everything.
Awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming to talk with us. And absolutely, I am very excited to see more of your work. I hope we get to see it in the future.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm sure you of all people definitely want to see it. So where can we find you online? Where can we find some of your work? Is it out? I mean, do you have it up anywhere, or is anything coming out? I know you mentioned a little bit about some shows that you have in development earlier. Can you talk a little bit more about those and let us know what to look for from you from the future?
Yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, I'm developing a whole bunch of shows. So I have Parker's Fall with ABC Signature Studios. So we're going to be taking that out soon. So don't know if it's for sure happening, but hoping. And then I'm doing a show called Kin, the supernatural reimagining of Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, cool. And
I'm excited about that one. And I'm working with a German company, Calibre Studios, on that. And so they're taking that out shortly. And then I'm really working on show creation right now. It's been my main focus, you know, taking this time after X-Files to try and see if I can get any of my shows out there.
That's awesome.
So that's been my full-time. So I'm developing two more ideas right now. A medical show with a doctor. I've partnered with a doctor. And then another show I'm working on. And hopefully I can get one of those out there for you guys.
Awesome. We'll be looking forward to it.
You.
In the meantime, can we find you online or?
Yeah, I have a website, KarenDNelson.com. And okay. I think I've got some of my shorts up there.
Oh, cool.
I think I'm still password protected on Grace.
Okay.
But it is on the season 10 DVD.
Yeah.
Some of my other stuff is up there. Yeah. So I'm starting to get into the Twitter thing.
Yeah.
So Twitter, because it's fun to interact. That's why I wanted to live tweet. I was just like, I want to interact with these fans and get to know them. And
absolutely.
So it was kind of fun.
Yeah. Twitter's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, we really, really appreciate your time. It's been
Thank
wonderful
you.
Talking with you and getting a little bit more insight into this fantastic episode.
Good.
It's definitely going to be one for the history books as far as the X-Files goes.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. That makes me happy.
As always, I'm Sarah Blair. Thank you for joining us. You can find me on Twitter at Sarah L. Blair, SarahLBlair. And look us up on our fan group on Facebook at The X-Files Basement. So thank you all for joining us. For until next time, trust no one.
The X-Cast, an X-Files podcast, is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXCast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXCast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IAmWillAye.